a matter of fact, times you feel like he's not getting touches. We all just need to continue to be aggressive. He needs to be aggressive to help us try to send this game back to Golden State. I think he's looking forward to the challenge. I think he's looking forward for the moment. We definitely need him. He's too big of a piece to our puzzle. We want to continue to attack. We want to continue to not turn the ball over and stop those guys. You know, just having one of those barrages from the perimeter.
Only thing that matters is wins and losses. I'm big in momentum, but it's so shifty sometimes. It could, you know, minute to minute, second to second, it can change. So I'm just about offensive execution, defensive execution, and sticking to our game plan.
They have different versions of isolation basketball. You know, when you post a basketball, or, you know, nowadays guys are posting, you know, 15 or 16 feet and in. You know, you call it a post up, but some people call it isolation. So, you know, when we post LeBron against matchups or mismatches, I think it's good for us. But then also, I think, you know, the way they play of switching 1 through 5, you know, you're going to have to play some ISO and one-on-one basketball, but you got to be able to attack and attack early.
It's bad news for our team. You know, Bogues has made an impact in this series. First couple of games, I thought he was really impactful. Still, he's a defensive presence at the rim and rebounder and a great passer. So we'll miss the minutes that he's been giving us.
Bianca Batuta. He doesn't want to go down. You can't stop him. 38 yards. Second and goal. They give it to him. Touchdown. Wow. In Ann Arbor, this is how they do it. Bianca Batuta, 306 yards rushing.
He runs Woodson all the way back to the 22-yard line. Woodson's got one block.
Center is Wangler at the 45. He goes back. He's looking for a receiver. He throws downfield.
We're going to win it as a team. They can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The extravaganza indeed returns once again to ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, what's going on? Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the opportunity to chat sports with you over the course of the next 2 hours leading up until drive time with Miller. And my goodness, we got a lot of fun stuff to do today. We're going to take a little bit of a break from the NBA finals coverage we've been providing you almost nonstop since the finals began, and really, you know, kind of throughout the playoffs, especially since the playoffs began seemingly an eternity ago with the Cavaliers and the Pistons going head-to-head in round one. We've been doing a lot of NBA, quite obviously, and with very good reason. But today, since it is another off day, and they will not play Game 6 in Cleveland until tomorrow, Warriors and Cavaliers, we're going to take a little bit of a break from that today. Not that we won't discuss it at all, but certainly we have a number of other things to do today, and one of those is going to talk a little Tigers baseball, as our friend Anthony Fenwick from the Detroit Free Press, who covers the Tigers, will join us at about 3:35. And beyond that, a number of other very cool stories to talk about, including Mount Rushmore. That's right, Mount Rushmore of not the NBA, but of something very, very different. And this is very cool, and I'm going to give it up to CFB 24/7. And the NFL Network, because this is something that's kind of been pushed and advanced and put on by the NFL at NFL.com and the NFL Network and CFB 24/7, college football 24/7. Very, very cool what they are doing regarding Mount Rushmore. You know, when we talk about Mount Rushmore, most recently we've been talking about it in terms of the NBA. Why? LeBron James brought it up last year at some point, and he was talking, or he was asked maybe, you know, about Mount Rushmore, the four greatest players. If you were to put a Mount Rushmore together, what four faces, being the most influential and greatest players in the NBA history, would you have on it? And if memory serves, he named Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and I believe he said the big old Oscar Robertson, did he not?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think those were his four, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And it started a really interesting conversation for a long time on ESPN Radio with Greeny and Golic, certainly, and locally on shows like this one, a lot of people doing it. And he, of course, made really, really strong statements, LeBron, that is, when he said, by the way, I will be on that before I'm done. I don't know who's getting knocked off, but I will be on that Mount Rushmore. So pretty heady stuff, pretty strong talk and a lot of bravado, and why not? He's got the ego. He deserves to have that ego. He's certainly backed it up through his career for the most part. So, but anyway, that conversation really was a lot of fun. CFB 24/7 and NFL Network, and essentially it's NFL on Twitter, at NFL_CFB, which is college football 24/7. They are doing the Mount Rushmore of players for 10 elite college football programs. The first one that they did that I was made aware of a few days ago was Michigan. And that's why you just heard what you heard. You heard some highlights from some of the great Michigan players that could be considered for Mount Rushmore. And I asked Jim Cushlin, who put that outstanding montage together. Cush, very well done. I'll say it publicly. Like I said to you privately, I really loved it. Great memories there for all Michigan fans. I said, give me a list of what you had there. And what you heard was a touchdown Timmy Biakabatuka against Ohio State in 95 when he ran for 313 yards. You heard a clip of Charles Woodson, a punt return for a TD against Ohio State in 1997, his Heisman year and their national championship year. And I believe you also heard a pick after that. Anthony Carter, number one, he started the tradition and trend of Michigan receivers, All-American Michigan receivers wearing number one when he was just lighting it up long. He was so far ahead of his time as one of the great receivers of the late 1970s, and that was a touchdown catch versus Indiana in 1979. I think that was the 95-yarder, wasn't it, Jim?
Yes, it was. That was the game winner.
And he was just so, I mean, can you imagine a guy like A.C. Anthony Carter if he was playing in today's spread NFL? Oh, my God. Or in college, the college game, for that matter. You heard Michael Hart, the great running back from the 2000s against the Northwestern Wildcats.
I included him because he's the all-time leading rusher in Michigan history, the only one to crack 5,000 on the ground.
Very good reason. And, of course, Heisman Trophy winner Desmond Howard, and that was the punt return, after which he struck the Heisman pose in the end zone, which would be repeated by Charles Woodson about 6 years later. Desmond did that in 91 against the Bucks. Charles Woodson did it against Ohio State in 1997. And then, of course, from Bo Schembechler. And it's going to be very interesting. We're going to talk more about this in the 4 o'clock hour, but we just wanted to lay it out there for you as to why we played a bunch of Michigan player highlights. Since that time, I've come to be aware that the NFL has also identified the Mount Rushmore honorees for a number of other schools, including Ohio State, and I will tell you who those are coming up in just a bit. One other thing on this, and like I said, we're going to talk more about it later, but just to kind of lay it out. Jim, what the NFL did, and in this, you know, fun little ranking or Mount Rushmore compilation that they've done here, it wasn't necessarily the best players at each of those schools. They did it from an NFL standpoint. The best NFL players from each of those schools.
Right.
So, for example, at the University of Florida, if they had done one, which they didn't, Tim Tebow, who's one of the greatest college football players of all time, but didn't really make it in the NFL, would not be on the Mount Rushmore. So there's two conversations to have there. One is just that, the way they've done it, and it's probably hard to argue for most of these schools, and I've looked them up, they're Mount Rushmores. But two is the way, you know, that we were doing it. You know, what you said, you know, Tim Biakabatuka never became a great pro. Neither did Michael Hart, but he was the leading rusher at that school. So
right.
Those kinds of things. Just the best players in their time at the school. Something else that we should probably kind of kick around. So, and there's, like I said, there's a lot of really, really great conversations to be had. So far, the schools that I have in front of me that they have finished, talking about NFL and CFB 24/7, are Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska, Oklahoma, LSU, the University of Miami, and Tennessee. So they, again, went with the greatest NFL players from each of those schools, the top four, to make their Mount Rushmore. And some of these names are very, very, very cool, and it's going to be a real blast kicking those things around as we decide whether or not they got it right. And then, like I said, kind of expanding upon it and identifying just the best players in their college years, in their time at those schools, which I think might be a very, very different list than some of these, including the Michigan one, that you just heard some of the highlights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing that's going on with these guys out there that are trying to do this. You do it from who was the best. Because Michigan's a perfect example. And there's where it comes to the best NFL players that came out of Michigan. For obvious reasons, Tom Brady is one of the four. Well, quite frankly, as he stacks up in his career at Michigan, there's really no real discussion in a way. So it's how do you define the list? Is it how they did as a pro or what they did while at the school?
Right. Those are really going to be two different lists.
Exactly.
Because that the way they did it is how they did as a pro. The way I would like to do it is to talk about those. First of all, there might be some really good controversy in those decisions. But then second of all, forget about how they did at the pro level. How did they do at the college level?
Right.
How actually, how outstanding were their careers? So, for example, just to throw it out there again, when you look at what, some of the clips that you just played, Jim, the University of Michigan superstars, their Mount Rushmore guys, if you will, these guys, some of them were not the best players ever at Michigan, but they just turned into great pros, as you mentioned, Brady. And conversely, a guy like Desmond Howard, who was just one of the best players ever at Michigan and in college football,
right.
An All-American receiver, an All-American kick returner, an extraordinary, just a bolt of lightning threat anytime he had the ball, wouldn't make it. In fact, didn't make the NFL's college football Mount Rushmore list because he didn't have a great pro career. His highlight, of course, is winning the MVP of the Super Bowl with some returns that were just phenomenal that sparked the Packers. But, didn't turn into what they thought he would in Washington when they drafted him to join the quote-unquote fun bunch at the time. If you remember the Redskins receivers,
yep.
They brought Desmond Howard in. It's like, oh, my God, is he going to thrive there? Well, just never really worked out that way. So you're going to have great players from the college level who didn't make it to the Mount Rushmore because of the way they evaluated them. And then we'll kind of, we'll run down each team as we have them anyway. And then we will talk a little bit more about a second list that we would put together of each college program. So if you're a Michigan fan, we want to hear from you. If you're an Ohio State fan, like I said, we're going to do a little bit more of that at 4 o'clock because we're going to do baseball coming up here at about 3:35 with Anthony Fenech talking a little Tigers. But if you're a Michigan fan, we want to hear from you about that Mount Rushmore. I'm not going to give you the full list yet. You can probably look it up if you are so inclined. Same thing for Ohio State. We're going to run down that list for you, too. If I'd have known we had it, I would have given. I would have asked Jim to throw some of the Ohio State stars in a montage. All we did was the Michigan one because it was the first one that was presented. So we're gonna kick that around a little bit more in the 4 o'clock hour. In the meantime, I just want to bring up a story, and you maybe already know about it, but I just think it's very, very cool. If you were not made aware of it, speaking of the NBA Finals, has nothing to do with LeBron James or Kyrie Irving or Draymond Green or Steph Curry. ESPN and TNT, as you know, are rival companies. Turner Sports and ESPN, they battle one another. Very rare is the occasion on which they may conspire and collaborate with one another. They have decided to partner with one another in a very, very cool way for game number 6. Craig Sager, you probably know, is battling once again with leukemia. He's fighting leukemia. It's something he's had to fight with for the past few years. Sometimes it's in remission. Sometimes he's healthy. Sometimes he's not. And it's a really, horrific thing, obviously. Well, he has never been able to work in NBA Finals. He's never done it. And since ESPN has the contract with ABC for the NBA Finals, he won't get a chance to this year. Until now. Craig Sager, 34-year veteran working the sidelines of the NBA for Turner, popular and known for his flashy suits and his really warm and funny demeanor. He's facing this again, and he's never been able to work the finals, so he's going to, thanks to a joint venture between ESPN leadership and TNT, he is going to share the sideline reporting duties with Doris Burke tomorrow night, Game 6 in Cleveland between the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. And I got to tell you, I just can't, I can't say enough about what a tremendous gesture that is from both companies. You know, I've had my problems with ESPN. I've had my problems with some of the decisions they make, particularly kicking Kurt Schilling to the curb for some comments that he made and with respect to national security and other things going on his Twitter feed, kicking him to the curb but not doing so with other people that have been just as, if not more, controversial about non-sports topics, political in nature, etc. I've had some problems with the ESPN in that regard, and I've said so. But I'm going to say this. I'm always honest. I'm just like LeBron James. I'm going to criticize him when he deserves critique. I'm going to praise him when he deserves praise. And I'm going to praise ESPN right now for stepping up and saying, yeah, bring Craig over. We will put him on the broadcast with us at ESPN. Sager said in a statement released today, I'd like to thank Turner and ESPN for approaching me with this tremendous opportunity to be a part of the finals broadcast team. I've been watching the series very closely, and while I do not want to distract in any way from the event itself, I look forward to being in the building for what will be an incredibly exciting Game 6. The NBA community is a very special one, and this is a great honor. End quote. And in a video message to Craig Sager released by ESPN, Doris Burke, who's going to be sharing her sideline duties with Sager, said simply, welcome to our team. It is our honor. This is just one of those moments where, you take the hostility out of sport, you take the anger, you take the, the trolling one another the way the Warriors were doing to LeBron James over the Draymond situation and Klay Thompson and, the negativity of steroid use and accusations of cheating with deflated footballs and all the garbage that sometimes just rains down upon the sports and the games that we love. And you say, wow, this is really what it's all about. Craig said ESPN Executive Vice President John Wilczek, Craig is an iconic member of the NBA family who indelibly makes his mark on each and every broadcast. I know our entire team is delighted to work with him for Game 6. We all agree his professional reputation is second to none, though it's his personal reputation, that of class, selflessness, and respect, which makes this even more special for our team. We hope this will be a special night for Craig and his NBA fans. We are grateful for his interest and for the continued collaboration with our friends at Turner. And for those who didn't know, he missed nearly a full year, 11 months, while undergoing treatment for leukemia and bone marrow transplant surgery from his son before he was able to return to his position on the sideline during NBA coverage in March of 2015. But then he just revealed in an interview with HBO about 2 months ago in April that his cancer was no longer in remission and he's continuing to fight. Also, July 13th, ESPN is going to present him with the Jimmy V Perseverance Award at the 2016 ESPYs, something I'm not a big fan of the ESPYs, but I'm a huge fan of that gesture. So Craig Sager will be working with the ESPN team as Turner and ESPN hammer out an agreement to make that happen, and I just want to give them all a huge round of applause. Good stuff by ESPN, good stuff by Turner, and obviously God bless Craig Sager and bring him back to health, send cancer into remission, and do whatever it is that needs to be done to make him healthy and ready to go for that broadcast tomorrow night, and obviously much, much farther beyond that. All right, so a couple of other stories we're going to throw at you today, in addition to, as I mentioned, the very, very cool Mount Rushmore stories. Let's get that out right. Want to talk also a little bit about college football in the satellite camp stories. Michigan State coach D'Antonio said we want a unified Big Ten message. We want a unified Big Ten stand on satellite camps. We can't just have, Jim going out there and saying this is what we are all going to do, because we are not all going to do that. We should have a unified message the way that, maybe just to counter what Nick Saban is doing down there and criticizing these things. So he kind of wants to pool everybody together. Mark D'Antonio does with Jim Harbaugh and everybody else. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about that if we get an opportunity to. I mentioned baseball, the hot-hitting Tigers taking on Chris Sale, the ace of the White Sox staff. Today we're going to talk to Anthony Fenech about that and get an update on where they are in the Central. The Indians have kind of hit the skids, losing a couple in a row at Kansas City, and I want to say three or four maybe of their last four.
Yeah, three of their last four.
Gordie Howe, the funeral, of course, for Gordie Howe being held, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Mr. Hockey and the loss, obviously, there, not just to the hockey world, as I said, the day we found out, the loss to the sports world of the great Gordie Howe. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And a couple of other stories regarding the NBA. Andrew Bogut, by the way, in that final series we talked about, we're going to take a break from most finals talk today. But Andrew Bogut is out for the entire rest of the series. That was confirmed today. So he will not play in Game 6. He will not play in Game 7, which could be a huge advantage for the Cavaliers. Jim, we saw in Game 4, how many times Kyrie or LeBron or whomever, J.R. Smith, found a way to get to the rim, got by their guy, and Andrew Bogut suddenly became Bill Bleeping Russell, swatting shots left and right, big, big presence under the basket, playing defense like nobody really had ever seen him play before, and he's not going to be there anymore. And that is a very, very good thing that for the Cavaliers, of course, not for him, but a very good thing for the Cavaliers. We can talk at least a little bit about that. And then a couple of other stories that we wanted to touch on for you this afternoon regarding I don't know if we're going to do it or not, because I just listed four or five stories. And the one we're going to talk about, if I get there, is going to take probably its own half hour. And that is, of course, what you're seeing on 30 for 30 right now. And this is one of those things where it's a rare time. And it's weird because I've said there's a couple of rare times in the last couple of weeks that I've had to do this. I normally do not mix my sports and my politics or news or social commentary. When I do this show, it is all about sports. It is all about games. It was all about in between the lines. Even the death of Muhammad Ali. I did not get into, the skipping of the Vietnam draft. I did not get into the controversy regarding his political or religious orientations or affiliations. I stuck strictly between the ropes because that's where I loved and knew Muhammad Ali the best. So I don't normally do this. And if we get a chance, like I said, it's going to need at least its own half hour, because it's a 7.5 hour mini series scattered over five parts on ESPN's 30 for 30 about O.J. Simpson. O.J. Race in America. I'm sorry, Made in America, and it's all about race, its impact on the O.J. Simpson trial, the O.J. Simpson crime, his continued presence in prison today, et cetera, et cetera. It's deep, and it crosses over from sports into society, obviously, as you can imagine, and it's something I'm thinking about getting into in the 4 o'clock hour late, but I'm not sure if I'll get there. I may end up having to save that for tomorrow, if indeed I decide to do it at all, because it is controversial. Some people are going to hear it. Some people are going to say, I saw this on the broadcast that upset me. I saw this that I said was spot on. Somebody else is going to call and say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about because it was wrong. It was this, it was that, when you get into something that controversial. So we may talk about that. We'll see if we have time to touch on it. But I do want to talk about all of the others first, including baseball, which will start up next. We're going to talk with Anthony Fenech, who joins us from the Detroit Free Press, covering the Detroit Tigers. Again, they got the White Sox and Chris Sale today, so baseball talk coming up. And we want to make sure calls in, too. 866-240-1065 right here on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That is indeed what they call the program. That's what we call the program. Thanks for being a part of it on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. It's 3:38. Hope you got a great day going and wrapping up soon. Punching out at 4 o'clock, maybe heading to the ball yard. Watch a little game. Get out to the old swimming hole. It's really, really nice. Jim, did you say it's going to rain?
Yeah, there's still all those chances. We got all that rain, of course, here this morning. But
I mean, isn't it done?
Well, it feels like there could be more. Humidity is nice and up today.
I know it is. That's the reason I was talking about going swimming. I feel like since I get done with the show, I'm going to just go dive. I really do. At any rate, some other people have to do work, like our friend Anthony Fenech, who always does the work and a great job of it. He is, of course, the beat writer for the Detroit Free Press covering the Detroit Tigers. And he joins us for his weekly Tigers chat right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's up, Anthony? How you doing?
What's up? You guys got, you're talking about swimming pools. I'm over here in Kansas City. It's like 99 degrees out. I can use a swimming pool right now.
I know, man. You know, the whole Midwest is kind of under a freak heat wave after it was only high of like 70 the last couple of days. So, yeah, it's kind of trippy. But anyway, Kansas City, by the way, is providing the heat. They have won four in a row. They're knocking the Indians around a little bit, who have lost two straight, closing up this division, as we kind of said, Anthony, the last time we talked. This is just what I expect to be, nip and tuck, really pulling ahead, you know, with any distance whatsoever. And right now, the top three teams, Indians, Royals, and Tigers, are two games apart.
Yeah, and I expect that to continue throughout the summer. It should be well, the Indians got to get a victory here tonight with Kluber going, but it should be good to see the Royals playing pretty good, playing against the Tigers this weekend. They got four-game series. Royals are going to be facing Justin Verlander and Michael Fulmer, so it'll be a nice little, you know, mid-June test to see where these teams are at. So I'm really looking forward to it. I like Kansas City, too. You know, have you ever been to Kauffman Stadium? It's a great park.
I love the city of Kansas City. Now, I've been there for actually Chiefs games, but I have not been there to a Royals game. So I can't speak to the park, but I agree with you. It's a great city. It's a great town. Really, really good people. And certainly they're passionate about their sports, too, including the Chiefs that I was there for. So I know you're going to have a good time there this weekend.
Yeah, I will.
So let's talk about them, though. Let's talk about them, and let's talk about the series that's coming up there. I mean, first of all, let's stay in order here. Chris Sale, one of the best pitchers in the American League, obviously big challenge tonight for the Detroit Tigers. Let's talk about that matchup first. Then we'll look ahead to Kansas City, because I got a better question for you about that. But that's a tough matchup, Chris Sale, for everybody tonight.
Yeah, and if you remember the last time Sale and Pelfrey, they met up, Pelfrey actually got his first win of the season. It's an uphill battle on paper, but the Tigers, they've hit Sale pretty well. They hit him, early this season pretty well. I think from the Tigers perspective, I think it's a little bit personal, because if you remember last year, the whole thing about Sale accusing Victor Martinez of having some guy with binoculars, and, I think this is a lineup that they're really starting to kind of hit their stride a little bit. I mean, if you've seen the run totals the last two nights, J.D. Martinez is hitting the crap out of the ball. Justin Upton seems like he's coming around. But I think this is something where they, when they're facing a big guy like Chris Sale, I think they focus a little bit more. I think their energy level's turned up a little bit, and especially with Sale, I think it's a little bit personal on their level. So it should be a good game tonight. Still, though, whenever you're going to build against a guy like Chris Sale that can really, he's on his game. I mean, no lineup can really touched that. I think that White Sox got a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, it's a good point. And by the way, I'd forgotten all about that last year, about the accusing of Martinez and everything else. So there is a little bit of a bad blood kind of a thing there. It'll be interesting to see if it plays out in any way tonight. But, you know, Chris Sale is, you know, what he won his first nine starts before he finally lost. And I remember looking back at last year, he did the same thing. Last time he won his first nine starts, it took him three more to get his next win. He's already over that. He's got 10 wins now, so it's going to be a challenge. 2.87 ERA. It'll certainly be a challenge for Pelfrey. But I mentioned going up to the Kansas City series, and I want to skip over a game. No disrespect to Verlander, but I just want to talk about Friday night, because I just want to talk about Michael Fulmer. What an unbelievable story. What an unbelievable season that he's having thus far. In the nine starts that he's had. So, is it fair to say out of nowhere, does that apply here, or did you or some other folks kind of see this coming?
I think saying out of nowhere would definitely apply. He's got a good pitching pedigree. I mean, this is a Tigers top prospect. But to see him develop so quickly, I mean, they sent him down out of spring training in Triple-A Toledo and told him to work on his changeup. And to see how far that pitch has come in such a short period of time, and just the arsenal he's working with, I mean, the upper 90s fastball, the wipeout slider. I mean, he's in company right now with a guy like Jake Arrieta. I mean, only two pitchers in Major League history have thrown, you know, six or more scoreless innings with three or fewer hits and four consecutive starts. I mean, to a man in the clubhouse, the only guy that will say that it hasn't been a surprise is Ian Kinsler, because Kinsler spoke very highly of him coming out of the spring, but he's been a surprise, and definitely right now, for my money, the front runner for the American League Rookie of the Year.
I mean, and it's not a surprise that he's doing this, I guess, because he's the top prospect in the organization as a pitcher, and he's got all of that ability, but he's 23 years old. He's 23 years old, and he's coming up here and doing this stuff. And that's the difference between him and a guy like Arrieta, of course, is Arrieta's, you know, story was kind of already written when he was with the Orioles, and then suddenly he found new life and became this dominant, you know, all-time dominant type pitcher, you know, with the Cubs. But this kid's 23 and doing what he's doing right now. That's, I guess, of course, where the big surprise comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like I said, I mean, given, you know, his top prospect status and whatnot, you can kind of expect him to come up and handle his own, but the pitch way that he has, really, you know, like I said, okay, well, he's their number three. Well, really, he's been pitching like their number one for the past month or so. And obviously, there's going to be some bumps in the road. There's going to be, you know, he's a rookie. There's going to be some teams that are going to hit him up a couple times. But by now, nine starts in, the book's out on him. The hitters with video nowadays, they know his tendencies, and they're still not unable to do anything with it. Personality-wise, personality-wise.
I'm sorry, but that's just such a good point you're talking about. It's not like this is three or four starts and nobody has seen him. You got nine looks at him. You've got, what, 53 innings to see him and all kinds of different situations. And you're right. They've got a book, and they still can't touch him right now. And that, of course, is what bodes so incredibly optimistically for the near and the distant future for this kid.
Yeah, you know, but, and you know, Bob, one of the guys that he reminds me of a little bit is Jose Fernandez. I mean, I know Fernandez is one of the best pitchers in the game, and he's a strikeout pitcher. Fulmer has shown that he can do it with the strikeouts without the strikeouts. But in terms of the arsenal with the fastball and the sliders, it's ridiculous. But really, the thing that's allowed him to have this kind of success so far is the changeup. And because if not, you know, you got the guys who won't be swinging at the slider. So he's come along very fast. And the question now is going to be what his inning limit is and if he's going to be able to pitch throughout the end of the year, because that's when they're going to need him the most.
And Anthony, Jim Kuchlin here. You know, the interesting part is, because you're right, they're going to need him. I mean, there's been issues, as we know, with this Tigers rotation. You know, Sanchez down, Zimmerman looked human the other day. You have some injuries. You're still trying to figure out with Daniel Norris, for example, the prospect they acquired a season ago. And then, of course, Mike Pelfrey, who, if I'm not mistaken, still has just the one victory as of right now.
Yeah,
so on top of everything that we've seen out of Fulmer, to tip your cap to, quite frankly, the Tigers have needed every bit of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially now that they got Anibal Sanchez and then $15.8 million in the bullpen. I mean, you know, if you tell me in mid-June that Sanchez is in the bullpen, I'm saying this team's, you know, five, six games under 500. There's no chance they make the postseason. But with the emergence of Fulmer, I mean, he's really stabilized that starting rotation. And I think it's allowed them to do a couple things, too. It's allowed them to put Shane Green back in the bullpen. And Shane Green really looks like he's helped out bullpen in that seventh, and he's been kind of lights out since he's got there. So I think it helps on two fronts. Now they just kind of got to shore up what they're going to do with, you know, the four and five spots, Pelfrey or Matt Boyd or Daniel Norris, which I expect at some point they'll have Norris come up for Boyd. But, yeah, I mean, Fulmer is looking like the real deal, guys.
Yeah, and you know what? The only guy we haven't talked about in the lineup right now is Verlander, and he's just quietly won four of his last five starts. He's lowered his ERA from a season high. No, not a season high, beg your pardon. Early on, it was 6.49, but it was over five, and it's steadily declined basically the last five starts, and now down to a very respectable 3.77, and he's over 500 at 6-5. Where is Justin in your mind? Is this going to be the continuing trend? Is he going to continue to drop that and get that lower and closer to three? Or, you know, is this going to be kind of an up-and-down situation?
No, I don't see how it's going to be up and down. I just think that he's kind of hit his stride. I don't expect him to, you know, I mean, look, I mean, we know how baseball is. Every now and then he's going to get hit up for, you know, five or six runs, but I would expect that to be the rarity going forward. I mean, he looked really good in this slider. You know, it looks like a cutter. He calls it a slider. I don't really know what it is. Sometimes I think that he's just not telling us what it is, but whatever it is, it's really taking his game to another level. Velocity is a lot more consistent up in the mid-90s than it was last year, and he just knows how to pitch, and he's really learned how to pitch over these last 3 years. And I don't think it's any coincidence that he said to learn how to pitch after his struggles. But, I mean, he's a guy you can go hang your hat on every fifth day, so I'm really excited to see him face the Royals because, you know, the Royals are a good team, and they might not be as offensively impressive as they were last year, but it's still the defending world champions, and this is still a big series, so I'm looking forward to see what Verlander does on
Well, that you just said my next question. We're talking to Anthony Fenech, who is a Tigers beat writer covering the team for the Detroit Free Press. You said it's a big series. I was going to ask you how big it is. Again, I think we all agree that this is not, you know, there's nothing in June that is going to be like it would be in late August or in September, certainly as far as the series. But in a give, in a nip and tuck kind of a division where there's three or four teams that are going to be very close to one another, a four-game set in the middle of June, not too far away from the All-Star break, between two teams that are, you know, virtually deadlocked in the standings, and one is the defending champion, it does have, you know, at least some classification of big to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And let's not talk to Terry Francona about that, because I asked him earlier in the season about, you know, when they swept the Tigers, if it was a big, you know, big sweep, and he's like, nah, it's, you know, this is baseball, you know. But to me, it is a good barometer of where these two teams are at, and at the end of the season, you know what I mean, like one team takes three games, the other team, you know, loses three games. At the end of the season, you're going to look back and say, you know what, maybe that one-run game in the middle of June could have been the difference. So, although the baseball players don't look at it like that, us in the media, we got to kind of look at it like that. So, again, it's always fun to come to Kansas City. The Royals are a good team, and I think the Tigers are a good team, too. So it should be fun watching them play.
Injury front, anything to report? What's wrong with Avilas? He hurt his wrist. Where's that?
He's day-to-day. It looked a lot worse, to be honest with you. When I saw him walking up the field yesterday, I thought, like, okay, he knows something's wrong with it. But just day-to-day at this point, so we'll see. I mean, Avilas is in that same boat as Romine. To me, in my opinion, both of them are a little bit useless right now because they're both bum. And, you know, if you only have one utility man, like most teams do, one of those guys can get more reps. But now you have to get both of them reps. And, you know, like one of them's not getting the, you know, plate appearances every 5 days, and you're kind of back to point A. But yeah, he's day to day, so we'll see how he feels today.
Victor missed two straight with the knee. Is he okay? Is this just precautionary, a little rest? What's up?
Well, they're playing it down, but I mean, whenever Victor Martinez's knee is hurting and it's been bothering him for a little bit, and you can even see at the plate, they say it doesn't hurt him when he's swinging, but he's not hitting with as much power as he was a little bit ago. I mean, that's always a concern. Just like I told you guys before, you just never know when he's going to make the wrong movement. He's going to hurt it for good. So I think they'll take it easy with him. They might give him a day today against Sale, just because Sale's a tough pitcher. But knowing Victor, and like I told you about the backstory, I know that Victor's going to want to be in there. But one of those things, you just kind of got to ease off the gas with him a little bit and kind of hope that'll do the thing. But to me, from my perspective, it's not a good sign that he's been kind of feeling it for a few weeks now.
Anthony, last thing. Cush, you can feel the weigh in on this, too. Everybody who covers baseball or watches it regularly has an opinion on this. Pete Rose says, doesn't count, forget about it. Talking about Ichiro, who has 2,977 hits in his major league career, 1,278 in 9 seasons in the Japanese league. That means he's one shy of tying Rose's 4,256 all-time hit record. Pete says, forget about it. This isn't it. And this is Pete's words, by the way. He told USA Today Sports, quote, "It sounds like in Japan they're trying to make me the hit queen." And, of course, he's known as the hit king, that Ichiro is going to be the all-time hit king. How should those, you know, 1,200-plus hits in Japan be, you know, be counted, I guess, or not counted toward Ichiro's total? Anthony?
They should be counted as hits in Japan, not hits in Major League Baseball. I mean, Major League Baseball is the highest brand of baseball in the world. I don't think you can quantify or you equalize those hits from Japan into the hits of the Major League. It's unfortunate that you know, it would be nice to see Ichiro come up as, like, you know, a 21, 22-year-old. And then we might have something to talk about. But at this point, it's all kind of like, all right, he did his thing in Japan, he does his thing here, but they don't equal out to me.
Yeah, and I'm with you guys. You know, in Japan, hits don't count, though. To me, it is very interesting that he's just 23 away from 3,000, which, of course, is one of those great benchmarks. So,
and he started at age 27 to do
because
that,
he had to play all those years in Japan. Yeah. And basically what I'm wondering is, a guy like Ichiro, he especially gets that 3,000th hit, which should be, by the way, he's hitting 347 in 121 at-bats for the Marlins this year. He gets the 3,000. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer, guys?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I don't think there's any question.
I agree with you.
I mean, all time, first of all, he was Rookie of the Year. He was an MVP. He's got it. What's that?
The same year. He was rookie and MVP in that same year in 2001.
Batting title, league leader with 242 hits, 10 gold gloves, two batting titles, actually. Not one, two batting titles.
And 262 is the all-time record. That was in 2004.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm talking about the year he won his first batting title with the MVP with the 242 hits. But then the overall record of 262, the 10 gold gloves, like I said. So, yeah, I mean, if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, I mean, there's something wrong with the ballot, I guess. Maybe they spelled his name wrong or something because that's,
no, absolutely.
That's
I mean,
a given.
He would have come up as like a Trout or a Harper, you know what I mean? I know he's not hitting for the power like that, but this would have been a guy that came up and started dominating when he was 20, 21, 22. And it's just kind of mind-boggling. I mean, yeah, I feel like, you know what, if he does come up in that same kind of progression like the players here do, yeah, he's a guy that's probably going to be the hit king, but I just don't think you can take into account those kind of those hits in Japan. But he's, yeah, I agree with you, Bob, first out for sure.
I think 20 years ago, and maybe 25 or 30 years ago, this isn't even a discussion, you know, on sports radio or anywhere else. But I think that the number of pitchers who have come over from Japan and the number of, you know, incredibly talented players that have come over here since the game has become more, the globe has shrunk, if you will, because right now, if you're a great player anywhere in the world, you're coming to the bigs. But it just kind of shows that he wasn't getting those hits over there for 9 years off of AAA and AA type talent. He was getting hits over there off of the best pitchers in the world that weren't in the Major League Baseball, that had the opportunity been there, would have been in Major League Baseball, you know, kind of like they are now in the last 20 years. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I would say. I mean, I agree. Pete is going to hold his record, and nobody is going to add these to it. But when you talk about it from a, you know, a sports bar standpoint or a sports radio standpoint or writing for a newspaper like you do, there's you know, there's got to be some credit given that, hey, those hits, it's not like they don't count for anything. You might not add them to the total here in the majors, but those 1,278 other hits didn't come off scrubs. We found out how great the Japanese pitchers are as we've invited them here more and more and more over the last several years.
Yeah, it's nice even on, you know, even on a Wednesday afternoon, you give each other something to do because I feel like he's kind of been overlooked. And this guy's 42 years old. He's still hitting, what, 340? I know he's not playing every day, but I think that he's kind of been overlooked in terms of, like, the great players of this generation. And he's right up with all those guys.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Good stuff, as always. Anthony Fenech. Anthony, enjoy the game. Obviously, Tigers and White Sox tonight. Enjoy Kansas City over the weekend. I know that's going to be a lot of fun. And we can't wait to talk to you next week and look back at it and see what kind of impact it has.
Bob, Robert, Jim, James, talk to you guys later.
You got it, Tony. Anthony, there you go. Anthony Fenech, Detroit Free Press, joining us, talking a little Tigers baseball, a little MLB, too. I wonder if anybody really thinks, you know, that the hits that he accumulated in Japan should be added for the all-time. You know, the real answer to that, of course, is does anybody consider or has anybody ever considered Sadahara Oh, the all-time home run king, when, of course, we know the all-time home run king is Hank Aaron? And that's right. I'm going to say that and continue to say that because that's who it is. Forget about Barry Bonds. I'm sorry. I don't count cheaters. But, you know, it's always been Hank Aaron. So in Pete Rose's defense, certainly it should be the same way with base hits. But Ichiro is such a unique dude, such a unique cat, that he could have 9 years and rack up that number of hits and then come over here at the age of 27 and be on the verge of 3,000 here at the age of 42. And, oh, by the way, it's not like he's just getting a knock now and again trying to get to, what does he have? What did I say he has?
2977. That makes him 23 away.
So it's not like he's just getting in a bat every now and again. He's got 121 at-bats, and he's hitting 347. So that's as the fourth outfielder for the Marlins. So if he actually gets a little bit more PT, a little bit more ABs, is going to happen.
No, he's going to. I'm convinced. Late August or September, we're going to have a watch on the Miami Marlins for Ichiro's 3,000 hit.
I think before that, Jim. I do. I think before that.
I'm trying to factor in the fact he's playing more part-time, as you point out. But
I know,
true.
But I think even on a part-time basis, we're at, what, June 15th, so we're halfway through the month. I'm 45 days from now, you know, the end of July. I think by the end of July, we might be on that watch. I really do.
Very possible.
You know, at 121 ABs, I'd have to play it out over how many games it's been and what he's averaging, how many at-bats per game, but I think there's a great
chance. That's why I brought up the 3,000 question to you guys, because, yeah, you can't count the hits from Japan, but everything he's done in his major league career, he hits that, to me, he hits that 3,000 mark, which he should later this season. That's first ballot for this guy, period, end of story.
I mean, I was just trying to go off the cuff with some of the things we do know about him, MVPs and All-Star games and Gold Gloves and all mm-hmm. the rest. But if we actually did the research and looked it up, The career he's had has been, from the age of 27 on, the career he's had has been one of the all-time careers. I mean, just, the single-season hits record, like you said, 262, all the stuff that I was reading through, if we actually did the research and listed all of Ichiro's accomplishments, it would be amazing.
And by the way, because he's not a power hitter and never has been, I've always seen Ichiro as kind of, for this generation, watch Ichiro, guys, because that's kind of how Pete Rose used to play, especially at the plate with a bat.
You could say the
because
same thing about Tony
Gwynn. Because Pete wasn't a power hitter either. Yeah, Tony Gwynn's another one, yep.
These guys, Wade Boggs, guys that were just magic with the bat in their hands. It was like a wand. They could control the bat so well. And so, and maybe Ichiro was better than any of them. And I mean that very seriously, and that's some heady stuff. But just in terms of putting the bat on the ball and poking it to a place where nobody else is, which is the name of the game, hit it where they ain't, that's the way you do it. I don't know if anybody had better bat control than Ichiro Suzuki. And when you add the speed, which of course made him able to leg out so many more hits than a guy like Tony Gwynn, who was a little rotund, was ever able to do. I mean, I don't know. Ichiro is a really, really, really special player. And I had to grow to like him. I didn't like him at first. I didn't like the whole, you know, one name thing. Everybody else has two names, and, you know, I didn't care about the Japanese culture. You're here now. The last name should be Suzuki on the back of your jersey, not Ichiro. And I didn't really like the whole idea, but I got to tell you, over the last 10 years, 12 years, whatever it's been remarkable to watch, and I have mad respect for the guy. All right, it's top of the hour. Time for a Sports Center, and then on the other side, we're going to shift gears and talk college football. Why? Not a preview of the upcoming college football season and camps, which start a little over a month from now, but we're going to talk about a review. We're going to look back at the Mount Rushmore of each of the of several top college football programs. This was something that was started by NFL and CFB 24/7, NFL.com and College Football 24/7. They started with Michigan. That's what put it on our radar. We're going to find the four greatest players in Michigan history and the four greatest players to be on Mount Rushmore in the NFL that are from Michigan, which might be two different lists. We're going to do the same thing for the Buckeyes, the same thing for the Fighting Irish, the same thing for the Spartans, and maybe the same thing for a few other teams of note. So that's going to be just a lot of fun coming up here after the top of the hour Sports Center, which is now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
No matter if at times you feel like you're not getting touches, we all just need to continue to be aggressive. He needs to be aggressive to help us try to send this game back to Golden State. I think he's looking forward to the challenge. I think he's looking forward for the moment. We definitely need him. He's too big of a piece to our puzzle. We want to continue to attack. We want to continue to not turn the ball over and stop those guys. You know, just having one of those barrages from the perimeter.
Only thing that matters is wins or losses. I'm big in momentum, but it's so shifty sometimes. It could, you know, minute to minute, second to second, it can change. So I'm just about offensive execution, defensive execution, and sticking to our game plan.
They have different versions of isolation basketball. You know, when you post a basketball, or, you know, nowadays guys are posting, you know, 15 or 16 feet and in. You know, you call it a post up, but some people call it isolation. So, you know, when we post LeBron against matchups or mismatches, I think it's good for us. But then also, I think, you know, the way they play of switching 1 through 5, you know, you're going to have to play some iso and one-on-one basketball, but you got to be able to attack and attack early.
It's bad news for our team. You know, Bogues has made an impact in this series. First couple of games, I thought he was really impactful. Still, he's a defensive presence at the rim and rebounder and a great passer, so we'll miss the minutes that he's been giving us.
Bianca Batuta, he doesn't want to go down. You can't stop him. 38 yards, second and goal. They give it to him, touchdown. Wow. In Ann Arbor, this is how they do it. Bianca Batuta, 306 yards rushing.
He runs Woodson all the way back to the 22-yard line. Woodson's got one block. Another block. One more. Touchdown. No flag. Jackson throws in the middle. By Woodson.
Under center is Wangler at the 45. He goes back. He's looking for a receiver. He throws downfield.
Six. And
we're going to win it as a team. They can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, what a tremendous montage put together there by Mr. Jim Kuschel. And Kush just doing working overtime, going overboard, putting in man-type work out there on the production side of things. Well done, Mr. Kuschel.
I will still say the Ali one still took me longer than that.
Oh, I bet it did. And that was great, too, because you're mixing in, you know, highlights from his great fights with some of his great quotes, with some of the many great quotes said about him. That was tremendous, no question about it. Thanks very much for doing. If you're wondering why we just played a bunch of Michigan football highlights from years past, including the great Tim Biakabatuka, including Michael Hart, including Anthony Carter, AC, from 1979, Charles Woodson, Heisman Trophy winner 1997, Desmond Howard, Heisman Trophy winner 1991, all that stuff, and Bo Schembechler. The reason why is what we're doing in this second hour of the extravaganza, and we appreciate you being here. We want to hear from you about this. The first team that I saw, so I had assumed, and I'm just going to, you know, being honest with you here, the first team that I saw a Mount Rushmore, the first school, I should say, that a Mount Rushmore of their greatest players ever was being put together for was Michigan. And I sent this to Jim a couple of days ago, and I saw this on CBSSports.com, and I said, hey, look at this. Michigan football's Mount Rushmore, how do you limit it to four? And there was a really interesting piece as they started to name, some of the great players from one of the great programs of all time, a school that played its first game in 1879, has won more games than any other program, 11 national titles, 42 conference titles, 78 consensus All-Americans, and 3 Heisman Trophy winners. How are you going to narrow that down to just 4? And I sent this to you, Jim, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, this would be a really good, interesting discussion to have on the air and talk to maybe some Michigan folks about. And I said then, this is 2 days ago, I said, and, you know, we could just expand it and do some for Ohio State and Notre Dame and other teams that, of course, we like around here.
And I plan on finding highlights in the coming days for those two at least.
Well, you might not have to because I don't know. We're going to probably have that conversation in the next 45 minutes.
That is true as well.
Although it could be expanded. So I said to Jim, you know, because this is before I knew what I know now, and that is this wasn't from CBS. This was from the NFL. This is from NFL.com. And CFB 24/7, which is college football 24/7, they have put together the Mount Rushmores as they see it of NFL players from each of these high-profile football factory schools, and they included. Now I only see they said they were doing it for 10. What I see at least at this point, and maybe they'll add the other two in the next couple of days. I see 8 of them. I see Tennessee, Miami, LSU, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State. Now, I'm going to assume that USC is going to find its way onto that list. Would be, you know, probably be my next guest. Who's missing?
Notre Dame.
Oh, that's right. I said Notre Dame because you and I were going to do it, or we were going to do
it.
Right. But they haven't done it. There you go.
And I have no idea if they did those two, USC and Notre Dame, if they're only doing 10, then that means Alabama's left out.
Ooh, very, very interesting.
Because
point.
I'm looking at the one from NFL / the CFB thing you're talking about, and they say they're going to do 10, and there's already 8 up there.
Yeah.
So just between USC, Notre Dame, and Alabama, just to name 3 schools, who are you not going to do? Honestly, you should do all three.
To be honest with you, I'm trying to figure out how Tennessee found its way onto that list.
Peyton Manning.
I know.
That's my main guess, although I'm looking at Tennessee's right now.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a Mount Rushmore. I mean, everybody has a Mount Rushmore. I mean,
sure.
you could say one name for any school, but to be one of the elite football powers, multiple national championships, et cetera, you know, regulars in the top 10 throughout the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. I can see why Miami is there, LSU is there, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, and I said USC, and I'll say Notre Dame. And, yeah, I think Alabama should certainly replace Tennessee on this list. Over the next 2 weeks, CFB 24/7 will unveil its choices for the Mount Rushmores, top 4 all-time NFL players from 10 top college programs. The 10 were chosen based on the total. Oh, here's why, Jim. The 10 were based chosen, I'm sorry, chosen based on the total number of NFL players produced by the school.
Oh.
The series continues with the Oklahoma Sooners, which is on here from in today's list. So there you go. So again, now, all right, which school has produced more NFL players of Alabama, Notre Dame, and USC?
I got to look that up, actually.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, that's more of a rhetorical question, just kind of a, you know, that's how they'll decide it. So those are the ones that are still to come. At any rate, circling back, the piece on CBS that I read said, how do you narrow this down to four? And they start throwing names out there, and it's such a great question, like Charles Woodson, whom you obviously included in that montage.
Mm-hmm.
Desmond Howard, whom you also included in that montage, Heisman Trophy winners. Anthony Carter, who from 79 to 82 was way, way ahead of his time. He was such a phenomenal football player, catching passes at a time when they didn't throw a lot of passes.
Right.
Anthony Carter catching them, I want to say from Rick Leach back at that time, was just phenomenal. If he'd have played in a spread day like today's NFL or today's college football, it would have been incredible. And they included Bo Schembechler. How do you not put, if you're talking about, you know, this is the Mount Rushmore of Michigan football, he built it. I mean, you could say he built it. I mean, you might even want to go back and say to Fielding Yost really built it from 1901 to 1923, but be that as it may, let the debate begin.
The only possible qualm there is, do you think you should include just players? Because if the answer to that is no, then yeah, Bo's got to be on there in the same way that Woody Hayes
would
be
have
Ohio
to be
State.
On Ohio State's. Exactly right. And I'll be honest with you, I think you kind of have to consider that, you know, at least for the true icons of coaching. All right, joining us now to talk about all of this, Anthony Broom. Anthony is, of course, a writer with the MazinBrew.com, a part of SB Nation, a Michigan site online. And, Anthony, thanks for the time this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well, too. Thanks for joining us. It's been a while since we chatted, but we're glad to have you on. We just wanted to talk to somebody who covers Michigan very, very closely, which you do, which the website does, MazinBrew.com. So, you know, this is a really interesting thing that they're doing. And let's start off by asking your thoughts on the actual four that the NFL Network and CFB 24/7 chose. Now, again, they announced this as the top four players in the NFL in their careers from each school, not necessarily the four best college players. So the four that are carved into Michigan's Mount Rushmore, according to the NFL.com site, Tom Brady, four-time Super Bowl champion, obviously. Charles Woodson is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Steve Hutchinson, the great offensive lineman, and Dan Dierdorf, already a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. Those are the four that they came up with from their NFL careers from Michigan. Your thoughts on just those four?
I mean, I can't say I have any argument against that at all. I do think it, you know, with the criteria that they set of it being the guys that they have in the NFL, I mean, yeah, it starts and ends with Tom Brady. You know, might be the greatest quarterback of all time. So, would definitely agree with that. Hutchinson and Dierdorf on the offensive line. Obviously, Dierdorf is a Hall of Famer. Charles Woodson will be a Hall of Famer. I don't take issue to that list at all.
Yeah, I don't think you can. You know, I think of a couple of other people like Anthony Carter, but, you know, this is a guy who didn't have the opportunity. Again, he played in the late 70s. I remember how great he was in the late 70s just because I was a kid really, you know, into football at that time. I was, you know, around 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and I was a huge Ohio State, Michigan, Big Ten, you know, guy, and I loved some Anthony Carter. And he, of course, started the tradition of number ones, you know, being worn by the great Michigan All-American receivers. But, you know, you look at his NFL career, and he, of course, didn't have much of an opportunity. He actually played some in the USFL as well. So as great as he was at the college level, the NFL, you know, you kind of are limited to what, you know, those criteria that they set. But that does open up the next part of our conversation, and that is taking away the NFL and just talking about the all-time four Mount Rushmore Wolverines while they were actually Wolverines, we have a different discussion here, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. And to me, that starts and ends with, I mean, that is, what's the first name you think of when you think Michigan football? To me, it's, you know, it's Bo Schembechler. So that's a guy that's on that list. The next guy is probably Charles Woodson. I would say, Desmond Howard would certainly be on there too. And then I think that's where that fourth spot is the one where a lot of the discussion is. You go, I mean, you can go a guy like Jim Harbaugh, you can go Anthony Carter, you could go, you know, so many different directions with that. And that's, I mean, how do you narrow it down? It's, you know, a program with a rich history and a lot of all-time great college football players. Not all of them went on to have great pro careers, but, you know, how do you narrow it down with the guys that have been in Ann Arbor over the years?
Do you stick with the other Heisman Trophy winner? I mean, because you included Woodson and Howard, and the other, of course, is Tom Harmon. Now, it's 1940, so it's before you watched it and I watched it and most of the people listening ever watched it, but, you know, you don't just pretend it didn't happen because there isn't a lot of color video of it right now. Maybe you just kind of have to go that way. What do you think?
I mean, that's another right in the mix there. I mean, the game was different back then, but that was a guy who, you know, anything you can do on a football field, whether it be passing, kicking, catching, running, receiving, you know, it's, he did it all. So that's a guy that can be on there as well. And if you break it down by errors, yeah, that's probably a direction you go. But, again, that fourth spot, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of different ways you can go with that. And, you know, not to.
I think we've got to also look at maybe individual awards. And Jim Cushlin, feel free to jump in on this too. When you look at some of the, individual awards, such as Big Ten MVP, you know, that's an award won by Braylon Edwards when he was still beloved by many before he kind of flamed out in the NFL after one big year there. Chris Perry in 2003 was a Big Ten MVP. Jim pointed out that Mike Hart is the all-time leading rusher at Michigan. Does that mean he was the best running back ever at Michigan? I don't know, because I remember watching Tyrone Wheatley. I remember watching Timbiaka Batuka after that. There are a lot of great, and then you mentioned Jim Harbaugh, who was a Big Ten MVP as well in 1986, went on to have a solid but not spectacular professional career, lasted a long, long time, quarterbacks in playoff games. You got to take all of those guys into consideration, too, when you talk about All-Americans from Michigan.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, you know, as much attention as Jim Harbaugh gets now for being the head coach, that's another guy that you can put right there in the mix, you know, captain comeback, you know, famous for the guarantee against Ohio State,
yeah.
Had a lot of success there. I mean, that's, I guess the best way to do, I mean, there are so many guys. I mean, I guess the best way to do it is by era. I mean, again, you could probably put one together from, you know, when Michigan football was really, you know, and they'll get back to this, but when they were really, you know, churning along in the 70s and 80s, I mean, you could probably put a Mount Rushmore together for, you know, every 5 to 10 years. So
yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. Now the real question is do we keep a coach on it if you're doing just for the players and the, you know, the iconic figures? Do you keep Bo on it, or do you move one of these guys over to make room for a second player, to get a Harbaugh on there, or to get a Wheatley, or, and maybe it's a defensive player, you know, somebody who was a first team All-American like Lamar Woodley, from about a decade or so ago. Maybe you do something like that, because there's so many great players there that you're leaving off of it. Do you really want to take the spot up, by a coach?
Yeah, you know, I think I see these Mount Rushmore lists, and, you know, if I have to put one together in my head, I'm thinking about figures and people who had the biggest long-lasting impact on the program. Like, those are the four names that are most, you know, out there in terms of Michigan football and what have you. So I think that Bo Schembechler definitely has to be on there. If you want to get one of the – I mean, he was a coach, but, I mean, if you want to get one of those – non-player people in there, I think Bo Schembechler, there's a spot for him on that list, no matter which, I mean, most ways you slice it up, he's there on that list.
And certainly he's the face, and was for so long, you know, the tinted glasses face of Michigan football. I'm totally fine with that. So Bo Schembechler and Cushlin, help us out here, because I'm trying to track us. So we said Anthony Broom says Bo, Charles Woodson,
right.
Desmond Howard, and did you decide on Harbaugh, or what was your fourth decision there?
Oof, my fourth, gosh, I mean, we brought it up. It's from a completely different era of football, but Harmon.
We mentioned Harmon, that's right.
I would go Tom Harmon.
You go Tom Harmon.
I mean,
the number
98 and everything he did on the field, it's, I mean, there's not many highlights of him out there, but the ones that are, it's pretty spectacular to watch.
And that's a part of the point, Jim Kuslin here, Anthony and Bob, and that's part of the point when I think about this. You know, it's about what your criteria, how would you, you know, put this out there? Because if you're one of those guys, just for example, as I've been thumbing through them right now, if you're one of those guys that is looking at things like numbers, for example, first, that's going to throw it out of whack because Michael Hart, perfect example, only guy in Michigan history to rush for over 5,000 yards. He had 42 touchdowns, by the way. But the era he played in was, let's face it, from a Michigan perspective, kind of forgettable. It was the end of the Lloyd Carr and beginning of Rich Rod era. Now, I'm on the passing list right now. The top two passers by yardage and touchdowns, for that matter, are Chad Henne and John Navarre. I don't think anyone would consider them as part of a Mount Rushmore. So I think how you would put this together from the college perspective, not how the NFL list did theirs, but from the college perspective and what they did while at Michigan or whatever school you're talking about, it's really kind of how, you know, what criteria you use. How much do you put in, the team that he was on at that point, they were just gangbusters and were winning all the time or something like that. So it's part of this real discussion is really about what criteria I think you would use.
Well, I don't disagree. And you know, Anthony, to me, the criteria can't just be stats. We're talking about the best players. If it was all about stats, obviously Charles Woodson probably wouldn't be on it because his stats are limited in scope. You know, however many interceptions you can get, and then the, you know, a little bit of time that he returned some kicks and played a little bit of offense in that Heisman Trophy winning season of 97. And again, when you look at stats, those guys Jim just mentioned have way more passing yards and touchdowns than Jim Harbaugh, but neither one of them were as great a quarterback as Jim Harbaugh was. And, you know, David Terrell and I'm trying to think of some of the other great receivers that have come through who have more catches and yards and touchdowns than
Braylon
Anthony
Edwards
Carter
is number
did.
One. Mario Manningham is fifth on that list. That's just randomly picking out a couple
names
here at the top.
None of them were as great a receiver and a football player as Anthony Carter. So I don't think we can go by stats. You go by, you know, the eye test. When you watched them play, what kind of impact they had on the football field. And I think that's why, for me, and we can't do the eye test, right, Anthony, with Tom Harmon, because we didn't see. So for the guys
right.
I've seen, I kind of go with what you said thus far, and I would add Anthony Carter, though, as that fourth spot.
I mean, yeah, like we've said, there's so much you can look at. There's a different criteria for every person. You know, when you talk, you brought up a guy like Mike Hart, you know, this isn't a knock against him at all, but that was a guy that played all 4 years and had the chance to be productive, for 4 years. And that's not a knock against him, but, you know, when you see all-time leading rusher, that doesn't necessarily mean he's the best running back the program's ever seen. So
exactly, you know, right. That is exactly the point that I was trying to make, too. And same thing with the, you know, the passing yardage by Henne and Navarre and all these other guys. They played a lot, played for 3 or 4 years, started maybe 3 or 4 years, and guess what? You know, weren't good enough to go to the NFL after the junior year, and they played in a passing time. That does not make them better quarterbacks. So that's why Hart wouldn't be there. To me, Bjarke Batuka wouldn't be there, despite being, you know, maybe single season and certainly in a single game. You know, those kinds of records, to me, you got to go with the player, not just the numbers the player put up. So I think that's a really, really good list that we put together there. So Bo Schembechler, I mean, if I can say that we'll have some consensus here, even though you kind of give deference to Harmon and all of the things that he did on a football field and how great that was, that we have to imagine that was, since we couldn't really see it from 1940, you know, that we'll go with guys at least that we've seen and we can really kind of get a feel for that we've seen a lot more of, Woodson, Howard, Carter, and obviously Coach Bo. Is that a fair consensus there?
Yeah, I would say so. I agree with that pretty much. I mean, and I don't know if I'd really disagree with any list you could put together, because there, like I said before, there are so many guys, and you know, it just depends on which way you look at it. But you know, in the context of discussion we've had, that would be the list, in my opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what, Anthony, I appreciate you helping us work through it and just kind of kick around what the criteria ought to be and what, you know, what some of these guys have meant to the program, and especially keeping a coach on it or putting Coach Bo on it. And whether or not that would be carved out in the fictional Mount Rushmore. Anthony Broom with MaizeAndBrew.com, a Michigan site, a part of SB Nation. Anthony, it's always good to talk football with you, Michigan style. We look forward to doing it again as the season gets closer and closer. We get closer to training camp, and we'll talk to you then. Sound good?
All right, sounds good. Always enjoy coming on.
Thank you, man. We appreciate it, Anthony. Good stuff. All right, so there you go. That's the Michigan Mount Rushmore. Again, we started with them because that was the first article I saw. I have since come to find out that CFB 24/7 and NFL.com are putting Mount Rushmores together for 10 iconic, long-time, storied football programs, and they did, of course, include Ohio State. This is going to be ugly. I'm just going to tell you that right now. The fight over Ohio State's all-time Mount Rushmore, not just the one that they put together already. In fact, I'll throw this to you right now. I'll tell you what they put together at the NFL Network, NFL.com, I should say. The four names on the Mount Rushmore for Ohio State, meaning pro players, the best pro players from the university, are Orlando Pace, offensive tackle. Paul Warfield. People don't remember what a great receiver was. Again, because kind of like Anthony Carter, I said in the late 70s, Paul Warfield's superstardom in the 60s and then continuing into the 70s.
Famed 64 Browns was his rookie year, if I'm not mistaken.
There you go. Chris Carter, who was just ridiculous. His hands and his athleticism. Chris Carter was spectacular in the NFL and at Ohio State. And Jim Parker, another offensive lineman. You got two receivers and two O-linemen, Warfield and Carter, Pace and Parker, on the all-time Ohio State Mount Rushmore list of NFL players from Ohio State. Now, there's a lot of room to disagree with those because there are some tremendous players from Ohio State. They had great pro careers. But it's even going to be tougher to narrow it down to just what they did while wearing the scarlet and gray. That's what we're going to have, that conversation we're going to have next. We don't have a guest on for Ohio State to do this. We just want to do it with you. Buckeye fans, call and tell right now, tell us who you think needs to be on the Mount Rushmore of Ohio State football history. And I'm going to go ahead and just relieve the suspense. The guy who won two Heisman trophies, the only one to ever do it, is probably going to have a spot. That's right. So we'll defer to Archie Griffin and say there's three spots left. Help us fill them if you're a Buckeye fan.
So right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
All right, we continue, and I want to jump right in because I got a lot of people on hold who want to hit this already. So let me just recap where we are. NFL and CFB 24/7 have decided that the four best pro players to ever come out of Michigan, thus comprising their version of Michigan's Mount Rushmore, are the great Tom Brady, the tremendous All-American cornerback, All-Pro cornerback, and soon-to-be Hall of Fame cornerback Charles Woodson, Steve Hutchinson, All-Pro offensive lineman, Dan Dierdorf, Hall of Fame offensive lineman. That's what they had on. Had for the Michigan Mount Rushmore in the NFL. From CBS Sports, however, they went to what we just did. They went to the college level, just what they did while at Michigan. Their Mount Rushmore includes, and ours, Bo Schembechler, also Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, who was a tremendous All-American receiver and kick returner at the University of Michigan. And we decided to go with what they did at CBS, which was Anthony Carter as the fourth member of that Mount Rushmore. Very close call over Tom Harmon, also a Heisman Trophy winner who did everything. Now we are up to Ohio State. I read it for you before. I'll throw it at you again. The Mount Rushmore put together by the NFL, the best players to come out of Ohio State, Orlando Pace, Paul Warfield, Chris Carter, Jim Parker, two offensive linemen, two wide receivers. Almost as if on cue, Jim Cushlin, literally, while we were in the commercial break a moment ago in the Sports Center, CBS released their version of Ohio State at Ohio State.
Okay.
And they're four.
Nice timing.
And it's running backs all, with the exception, of course, as we talked about, of Woody Hayes. So Woody Hayes, just like Bo, has his spot on the legendary Ohio State Mount Rushmore. The other three, Hopalong Cassidy, Eddie George, and the only two-time Heisman winner in the history of college football, Archie Griffin. So they went straight running backs, and that overlooks guys like Chris Carter that we talked about, Chris Spielman, the All-American, all-everything linebacker.
All right.
Tom Cousineau, another one of those. Robert Smith, to me, one of the best college running backs in the Big Ten that I saw for a long time, although his time at Ohio State was surrounded by some controversy. Eddie George, as mentioned, and he's there. Vic Janowitz, who won the Heisman Trophy in 1950. The problem is, again, it's like Tom Harmon in 1940. We don't have a whole lot of points of reference there. We don't have a lot of video and that sort of thing. Those are just some of the names. But as I was trying to compile all of the greatness from Ohio State football, honestly, to overlook All-American players like Corey Stringer, who was All-American two straight years, to overlook guys like Sean Springs, overlooking guys like A.J. Hawk more recently, overlooking Pepper Johnson, who went on to be a Super Bowl champion, too, with the Giants. The list is just extraordinarily deep, and it's hard to narrow down. That's why we want to get our callers. You help us figure out who the top four Ohio State players while wearing scarlet and gray would be if you were naming this Mount Rushmore. We'll go to Mike in Perrysburg first. Mike, thanks for joining us. Go right ahead. Ohio State's Mount Rushmore. Who you got?
Yeah, I got Archie Griffin, Chris Spielman. Then I'd have to go with Orlando Pace and say my last one would be Eddie George.
It's impossible, actually, not hard. It's impossible to argue with any one of those guys. But just for the sake of it, why no Woody? Why do you not want the coach to be included on that Mount Rushmore to really, truly represent Ohio State football? Oh, we lost him? Oh, no. All right, it looks like we lost that call. We're going to Troy, who's next in BG, Bowling Green. Troy. You're talking Ohio State with us. How you doing, Troy?
Good afternoon. I'm going to have to go Orlando Pace, Chris Carter, Eddie George, and Chris Spielman.
Carter, Pace, George, and Spielman. I'm trying to keep a little tally just to see what we come up with here. Same question I just asked him before we dropped his call. Why not Woody? They threw Bo up there for Michigan. Why not Woody for Ohio State?
Well, I mean, because I think that it's not going to be too many years before Urban's going to be, you're going to be talking about Urban over Woody.
Ooh, really? You think?
Well, I mean, if he can rack up one or two more national championships, I mean, I think that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it is possible.
There is an argument to be made for that. That story's still being written. That's a good point.
Well, remember, he only has one championship, though, at Ohio State. You know, his other championships don't count. If you're looking at, you know, Ohio State's Mount Rushmore, he would have to win a couple more, maybe three more, to surpass Woody. And also, I would just throw this out there, if you're an Ohio State fan considering this too, you know, Woody was an Ohio State lifer. You know, Woody, once he got his head coaching job, that was it. You know, Urban, of course, has been, like a lot of other guys, bounced around, made a lot of his fame, most of it, in fact, at Florida. Now he's here. What if he doesn't stay? What if he wins a couple and then, you know, I don't know, Texas or Southern Cal or something else comes calling?
Well, I guess my question is, to this, and the same thing as Archie Griffith would be, if you had to pick right now, mm-hmm. based on what you know about Urban and what he did, which one would you pick? And I guess I would pick Urban over Woody, just personal preference. Okay. And the same thing with Archie Griffith, I think that I would pick 3 to 4 running backs before I picked Archie, no matter how many Heisman's he has.
Now you mean based on what they did as pros?
No, I'm saying just period.
You're saying just watching them at Ohio State.
I'm just saying if I'm recruiting right now,
yeah.
I don't know that Archie Griffith makes the top four in running backs at Ohio State.
Okay, that's fair enough. And that's why I love this discussion. Thanks, Troy. I appreciate it. I couldn't do that. Personally, I couldn't do that. I would not be able to keep a guy who won back-to-back Heismans. Think about all of the great underclassmen who have won Heisman trophies in the last 15, 20 years. And we all said, oh, that's going to be the guy who ties Archie Griffin and wins, you know, two Heismans. And then they can't put together the same back-to-back years. They just can't do it. Somebody who's able to become the best player and be recognized as such for two straight years, I'm sorry, I'm going to have him on that list. Now, having said all that, I would also disagree with the Urban over Woody thing. And that's not a knock on Urban Meyer, who's a tremendous coach and a tremendous recruiter. But we're talking about Mount Rushmore, which is the history of history. Urban is the present. He's the, I don't want to say this would dismiss him as a short timer to say he's the flavor of the month, but you understand my point. He's trending now because he is now. 20 years, 30 years from now, if he stays and grows old and gray and needs glasses with the Ohio State Buckeyes and he wins championships, I'll take that argument about Mount Rushmore. Today, if we're building that, there's no way if there's a non-player on that list or on that mountain, carved into that mountain, there's no way it's not Woody Hayes. Sorry. No knock on Urban, but we're talking history, not just trendy today. So that's where I go with that. So that was interesting. He said he had Eddie George, Orlando Pace, Spielman, and Carter, and he would not put Archie on it. Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Greg, who's calling us from Bryan. Greg, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Let's name these Mount Rushmore Buckeyes. Go ahead, sir.
Are you there?
Yes, sir. I got you. You got me?
Yep.
Okay,
yeah,
buddy, go ahead.
Eddie George, Spielman, probably Hayes, Woody Hayes, and then probably Antonio Winfield, just for the fact that he was pretty underrated, I thought, when he was with Ohio State, and then he had a good NFL career.
The key, though, just FYI, like I said, the NFL guys did the counting their NFL careers, or actually it was based on their NFL careers. This is just on the careers they had in Scarlet and Gray, just while they were at Ohio State. Would you put Winfield over, you know, some other great defensive backs, All-Americans, and guys who had been there?
I would say so. I mean, he's definitely up there. I would think. He was one of my favorite Buckeyes, so that's what I would.
Okay, and that's fair enough. That's all we're looking for is what you think, and there's no right or wrong answer here. So I'll put him down for you as a vote there. Thanks, Greg. We appreciate it, buddy. If I'm going to go, in my opinion, if I'm going to go with another defensive player, I'm probably going to another one of these linebackers after Spielman. Spielman is probably the benchmark. You know, he's the standard, but he's not the only. Obviously, there have been some unbelievable middle or inside linebackers in Ohio State's history. Going back, as I mentioned, to All-Americans in the 70s like Tom Cousineau, who was just unbelievable in 1978. Pepper Johnson. I mentioned Pepper Johnson, of course. He played with Spielman and, of course, got overlooked a little bit because of that. Who else? Guys like A.J. Hawk, which I mentioned as well. Not unanimous, but consensus All-American. James Laurinaitis was a two-year All-American, 07 and 08. That's pretty big. I'm going with somebody on the defensive side. It's not going to be a Winfield. It's not going to be a Mike Doss. No disrespect to any of these names. Let's put it this way. If I'm saying their names, they're not being disrespected. But, you know, Winfield was a two-time All-American, too, though. I shouldn't just be so quick. He was 97 and 98. Maybe overshadowed a little bit by some other names on that defense. Katzenmoyer was one.
Does Dan Wilkinson go on the list? He
Big
was a number
Daddy
one
Dan
overall
Wilkinson,
pick. Four. Yeah.
Yeah, 93. He was All-American.
I'm finding in both Michigan and Ohio State's lists as I'm trying to go through that. And yes, my criteria is what you did at Ohio State.
Yeah, on this, for this list,
in
right.
In both lists, for Michigan and Ohio State, I keep stumbling through all these possible picks for the number four slot, but I feel for me anyway on both lists, Bob, three are in stone. The three in stone for me in Michigan are Desmond Howard, Charles Woodson, and Bo Schembechler, and the three to me that are in stone for Ohio State are Archie Griffin, Chris Spielman, and Woody Hayes. I'm having trouble narrowing down the fourth, though, in both cases.
It's hard to go against Eddie George. It's hard to go against Orlando Pace, who was considered to be one of the most dominant offensive linemen in the history of college football.
Yeah.
And, quite frankly, one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play professional football,
sure,
too. If this helps, by the way, and just throw this out, I found a list of the only Ohio State players to ever have their numbers retired.
Okay.
Nobody else is ever going to do. And let me give you two lists, in fact. These are Pro Football Hall of Famers from Ohio State. Paul Brown, Jim Parker, Lou Groza, Dante Lavelli, Bill Willis, Sid Gilman, Paul Warfield, Dick LeBeau, Chris Carter, and Orlando Pace. So those were the ones that, you know, they kind of had to choose from when they did their NFL one, and they chose Pace, Carter, Warfield, and Parker. Now, from just having their numbers retired because of what they did at Ohio State, which is a very different honor, obviously, that list is obviously much shorter. So Ohio State Buckeyes that will never have their numbers worn again are number 10, Troy Smith, quarterback, Heisman, 22, Les Horvath, 27, Eddie George, 31, Vic Janowitz, the Heisman winner in 1950, 40, Hopalong Cassidy, the halfback. 45, Archie Griffin, the two-time winner. 47, Chris Harley. And number 99, Bill Willis. So you have a very short list of eight guys there who have their had their numbers retired at Ohio State. Maybe you kind of have to pick somebody off of that list, don't you, to complete the mount?
Maybe you do, and maybe one,
maybe Eddie is that guy to me. Maybe,
and maybe
Eddie George,
like the Harmon argument in Michigan, maybe you give love to somebody from way back in the day, because Ohio State, Michigan are some of the few programs that truly can extend back that far.
What's this music for, dude? We're not done, are we?
Unfortunately.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm looking at the callers here. People have answers they want to get. I'll tell you what, we're done. Drive time is coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to pick this up. I know we'll have a game six preview of the NBA Finals, but this is fun. This is really, really good stuff, and the debating can go on for hours.
I'll do the montage with the Ohio State version of this tomorrow.
I look forward to that, yeah. And then you know what? We'll put something together for Notre Dame, too, because we've got a lot of Irish fans listening to us here in Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan, over in Indiana. So we'll do a Notre Dame one as well. So we'll kick this around a little bit more tomorrow when we come back to the next extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. Have yourself a great night. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock right here on The Ticket.